गवते वासुदेवाय chosen today a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 17th chapter, verse 136. It is taken by the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita from a book which we all know, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the summary study, the Nectar of Devotion. And he quotes it in a section where he talks about Krishna being beyond the reach of material senses, and therefore he can only be really approached if we come to him in a service spirit. Only servants are allowed in this kingdom of Krishna consciousness. I said this to Ananda Chit, Syamananda, when we drove and we came to the Kiental. I said, so here's a border, well, let's decide if we want to cross this border. Only servants are allowed to cross, the others, yes. Here's a shloka for you. It's about service. Ata Shri Krishna Namadi.
Ata Shri Krishna Namadi.
Nabhavet Krayam Indriyai.
Nabhavet Krayam Indriyai.
Sevan Mukhehi Jivado. Svayam eva spurat yada. Ata Shri Krishna Namadi.
Ata Shri Krishna Namadi.
Navavet krayam indriyai. Sevan mukehi jivado. Therefore, material senses cannot appreciate Krishna's holy name, his form, his qualities, and pastimes. When a conditioned soul, however, is awakened to Krishna consciousness and renders service by using his tongue to chant the Lord's holy name and taste the remnants of the Lord's food, the tongue is purified and one gradually comes to understand who Krishna really is. This verse is recorded in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1:20-34, end of purport. But there is more, which Prabhupada said on this subject. He said, since Krishna's transcendental body is name and form, qualities, pastimes, and entourage are all the absolute truth, they are as good as Krishna himself. Sachid Ananda Vigraha. As long as a living entity is conditioned by the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the objects of his material senses, material form, taste, smell, sound, and touch, will not help him understand spiritual knowledge and bliss. So that's a rather philosophical way of saying that when our materially conditioned senses are operating, they will not be able to even perceive anything which is beyond the material nature. That is spiritual knowledge and bliss. Rather, these are revealed to the pure devotee. Once material name, form, and qualities are certainly different from one another. In the material world, there is no conception of absolute. However, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we find that there is no material difference between Krishna's body and his names, his activities, and entourage. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in the next verse says, Krishna's holy name, transcendental qualities, and transcendental pastimes are all equal to Lord Krishna himself. They are spiritual and full of bliss. So this points out to a totally different reality. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyade Satarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaknavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama Rama, Rama, Hare 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 Krishna. Let me tell all of you how happy I am to be able to spend this time with all of you at our summer camp. I really think this is a gift of Krishna to all of us, this summer camp, because maybe you have noted it is really possible here in this beautiful setting, the Swiss Alps, a little bit removed from the big towns and cities, to lose all the inattention which may come when we go through our daily life of, either at home or when we travel, or, we can really, in a way, healthily relax and think on about the deeper subjects, the deeper concerns, these things which may sometimes lie buried as a begraben under what we have to deal with every day. So it is a very, I'm already starting to come to my natural joyful self, so I'm very happy. I have heard yesterday from Gokrishna how wonderful the lecture of His Holiness Kadamba Kanana Maharaj was, and I do hope also to follow his example and see if I can say something of inspiration. My lecture today is on the subject of seva or service both to Vaishnavas and to Krishna. And I chose this verse because it tells us that the spiritual life really is so exalted, it is full of bliss and knowledge, and in order to really live such a life of bliss and knowledge, it is required to enter through a certain door, the door of devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also speaks about this in the 18th chapter, text 55. I do hope that I can chant the Sanskrit for your pleasure. If I start missing words, please help me. It's a known verse. Bhaktyamang apijanati javanyaschasmitatvata tato mang tatvato gyatva vishate tat anantaram. With a little help of my friends, I could chant this. Krishna there says, only by devotional service can I be understood as I am. And then he says something which is highly thought-provoking. He says, only by this understanding that I have to serve can one enter, vishate means to enter, into the secret of my understanding. No? To enter through the door which leads us out of this world and into the spiritual atmosphere, even in this life, you know, we need to become servants. In the Bhakti Sandarbha in Anucheta 304, Jiva Goswami, he says, even if one has no big spiritual practice, if one just consider, I belong to the Lord, as I'm his servant, that's how I live my life, that will bring one the perfect perfection. It's just this understanding, I'm a servant of Krishna. And I found in the Bhagavatam something where Prabhupada also says this, the perfect purification of the mind is possible only by being fixed in the conviction of being a servant of the Lord. Huh? So a devotee, when he begins to change his sense of identification or identity and says, yes, I'm, people may see me as according to my social position, according to my age, according to my passport, but really I am convinced inside my heart that these identifications are not really describing my essence. What I am in my true nature is that I'm a servant of the Lord. When you can come to this understanding in your life, that I belong to Krishna, I'm as his servant, I'm there, then, my dear devotee, this brings the purification of your whole life from the false ego, the false identifications, and this brings you to a place from where you can really practice your spiritual life. In a very exalted scripture, the Ujjvala Nilamani, we find two devotees discussing with each other why they want to be servants of Krishna and why they love Krishna. It's a very beautiful verse. I only remember it from reading it long ago, but I remember this clearly. One gopi talks to another about Krishna and says, Krishna has a special quality. Yes, said the other. What do you like so much in Krishna? Well, he does not take into account even an ocean of offenses. Even if I have done so many things, stolen things from him, you know, called him a thief and a liar, and so on. But he doesn't take into account even an ocean of offense. Wow, says the other gopi. Anything more? Yeah, says the first speaker. And when there's even the smallest amount of seva, he magnifies that and he makes it appear as something very great. Now you might say, well, this is in the spiritual world, but what is here? But you can be rest assured, when Krishna sees, amongst all the other things which are there in our personality, if he sees only a little inclination of service, then he accepts such a devotee, as was shown in the Ajamil account. No? He is like this. Vishvanatha Chakravarti describes the heart of our Lord, or the Krishna whom we worship. He says he doesn't have a place in his heart for the mistakes of his devotees. He doesn't see that. Look at the faulty material perspective. Someone may try to do things good, but when there is something which he does bad, everyone will talk about that. You know, oh, this is bad, this is bad. Even in, we are like this to our own selves. When we look at us, I don't know how you are, but I often see, I see the mistakes which I do. Oh, Sachinanda Swami, oh, when will you ever become a little wiser, please? A little mature. You are getting on my nerves and the nerves of everyone else, Sachinanda Swami. Not good. Yes, we have this somehow. But Krishna, being transcendental, he is different. He has a different perspective. Therefore, he is celebrated as Bhava Grahi Janadana, the Lord who accepts really the Bhava, the good devotional mood of his devotees. I was not sure if I would talk about it, but I made a note there on my note sheet. I want to give you an illustration from this, which is taken from a work called Bhaktamala. I think some of you are familiar with this story, so I will tell it briefly. There was once a lady devotee, her name was Karma Bhai, who had great affection for Lord Jagannath in Puri. Who of you has visited Jagannath Puri, if I may ask? Oh, many of you, many of you. Gaur Krishna even went inside the temple and saw Lord Jagannath. Yes, we are so proud of him. He had to do some special. But it worked. Lord Jagannath was merciful to him. So this lady could, some reason, don't know. She was not considered a very high lady. She came from a sutra background and so on. But by her affection, she could not not serve Krishna. She would cook every morning the poor man's food, which is called khichdi in Orissa. We call it khichdi. It's rice, dal, and sabji together. In German, you say ein Eintopf. I don't know how you say it in English. It's you throw everything together. It was not considered at that time something you could offer to the Lord, because, as I said, it was known as the poor man's or poor lady's food. But because, this is how the narration goes, she had so much affection to Lord Jagannath. Jagannath came personally to eat her khichdi because he considered this to be the tastiest preparation. So one day there was a Vaishnava devotee, senior devotee. She visited Kama Bhai for some reason, I don't know why, and what he noted was that she was late. She got up from her bed in the same sari in which she had slept, started to cook without first bathing. The Vaishnava says, impossible. What are you doing? You have to observe the rules for purity. So next morning, Kama Bhai did everything, la 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 la, and Kama Kanda, and all this, many rules and regulations, and she started very late, and as a result, Lord Jagannath, who came always to eat her khichdi at home, just before the morning breakfast, the chapati, what is it? No, the noon meal, chapanaboga. Is chapanaboga noon offering? Oh, breakfast, lunch. That's Rajbhog.
Chapanaboga means 56.
56, so it's the Rajbhog, the noon offering. So Lord Jagannath would always come to this Kama Bhai before the main offering, which went on at 12 o'clock in the big temple, so, and ate the khichdi. But because on this day, Kama Bhai was so late, because of all her rules and regulations, he had to eat hastily under great stress, and then had no time to wash his mouth and his hands. He just speeded back on the altar and came just in time when the panda opened the curtain. The panda looked at him. There was yellow khichdi sticking on his mouth, and the hands were all yellow. The Jagannath must have looked. So what? The panda was really shocked. He did his offering because you needed to be on time. Zack, zack, zack. And but when he took the plate away, he just went but very close and looked very close. Yes, there was a spot. And it was, he took it off the mouth, the end of the mouth. He smelled at it. Khichdi, the poor man's food. And it became a great, great problem. And the panda then said, my lord, did we do an offense? Was he a thief who smeared khichdi over you? Or what was? And the lord answered, In a dream, in the evening, every morning I go to Kamabai because I'm so much attracted by her sincere devotional service. Yesterday she was late because there was some fool who told her so many rules and regulations. The poor Kamabai could not finish it in time. And then he said something very important. There are so many practices and so many procedures and so many opinions about my worship. Not knowing this, if one forces a devotee by strong preaching to change the mode of worship to which he is spontaneously attracted, it's an injustice. Tell this devotee who went to her and totally confused her with a different type of worship and different procedures and methods than she was naturally doing, tell her, I'm not in favor of this. So the Pandas discussed this the next morning and then told the devotee. So as long as Kamabai lived, Jagannath came to her, and when she disappeared, he cried when she died. And then since that time, the king of Puri ordered Lord Jagannath, who seemed to like the khichdi, it should be offered everyday khichdi. You can eat this khichdi. It's really special. It's really nice. It's still going on. But I don't think this alone does justice to what we are just talking about. We are talking about service with devotion, not devotional service. Why was Jagannath attracted? Was it to the preparation, to the rice, the mung dal, or any other dal? And sabjis, you know, potatoes. Or was it to something else? What would you say? Of this devotee, yeah, the love and affection of Kamabai. And this is a really very important. I don't know if you remember, we were this. The purpose of this movement is love of Godhead, to develop that. And it's about this particular quality which I would like to say. When the Lord is known as Bhava Grahi Janardana, it means he takes the bhava. Bhava means the mood or devotional mood of everyone. He takes that. He's interested in that. Since he is transcendental, he's not so attracted to things of this world, which you can touch, smell, eat, taste, see, and so on. He is attracted in the love and of his devotion, devotees. Because this is, we have heard this many times, and when we hear such an information we have heard many times, it goes zoop out of our awareness and we forget it. I want to now illustrate this with a famous Sufi story which I heard when I was very young. It's really, really young. There was once Moses, you know, we have him in Christian life also. He was going in the mountains, he was alone, and he saw, he first heard someone praying fervently. So he was very pleased. Oh, I came to the mountains to see a religious man. Wonderful. Let me go there. And he went in the direction of the sound. And he saw a shepherd. And he said, he prayed. what Moses heard is, "My Lord, if you want, I will do anything for you. I could make you a meal with very good rice, mountain rice. And then I could wash your feet." Moses was going, "What? Washing feet? Then I could clean your ears." I've seen one of you always takes his glasses and cleans the ears like this. "I could clean also your ears, and I could remove the lice, loise, from your hair." When Moses had heard this, he said, "You blasphemer! God doesn't need that we wash his feet. He doesn't have feet like a dirty shepherd like you, which gets sweaty, and he certainly doesn't get lice. And cleaning your ears, such an uncultured thing, he doesn't do that." And he screamed, "You ignorant fool, you blasphemer." The shepherd immediately was, sorry. I'm so ignorant. Tell me how to pray." Moses said, "Yes, these are the prayers, introductory prayer, middle prayer, and prayer. And do it like this." Moses went away from there, and he had, it was said God spoke to him. He had a revelation. God spoke to him. "What have you done?" Didn't you see he was maybe not formally correct in comparison to your codexes? But his heart was pure. There was love in his heart. He worshipped me with sincere love. He wanted to do everything which would give me pleasure, including cleaning my ears. This is what I'm interested in. When I was when Maharaj was also there, the Berlin Rathayata, the devotees had a very nice new way of hosting the stage program. There was two devotees who would ask everyone who came on the stage a philosophical question, and they asked me, "What's the difference between Krishna consciousness and every other religion?" Give me a minute. What would you say? The Christians worship maybe different. The Orthodox Church venerates saints like you do. They have incense. The monks on Mountain Mount Athos, they pray and they sing. Many other religions, I have become careful to not say so many because everything is recorded in the information of the world. All religions, since time immemorial, have processes like we. Paying obeisances is done regularly, in religion, 5 times a day even. There is a lot of, they're singing. Oh, singing like anything. Have you heard the music of Nusrat Khan? They really get into their bhajans like we are tame, in comparison. What is their essential difference? I'm not speaking of language and of outer form. I'm speaking of content. Maybe intimacy. It's a good question, no? And as devotees grow older in Krishna consciousness, they don't say any longer they got it all wrong, the other religions, and we got it all right. There is really no reason to say such a thing. If you look into our success rates of a spiritual life, what's the difference? And I must say, the devotees had warned me. They had said, we will ask you this question when you come on stage. So I said, well, and you had to now speak it in a way which the public could understand. I said, see, in most of the religions which I'm aware of, they address God in relationship to this world. He's the creator. By his powerful energies, everything came to develop. They address him as omniscient. He's everywhere. He knows everything. He's omnipresent in this world. And one prays to him, please give me, take care of my maintenance. That's the behind the Christian prayer. Give me my daily bread. Maintain me in this world. No. Religion is a process whereby which you ask the Lord to help you in your life in this world. But Krishna consciousness talks of God at home, in his own domain, his own area, his own kingdom, and how he deals there with his devotees. It's the kingdom of love, where love is given and love is accepted. It's an exchange of divine love. The word for it, you know, and I could go on and on, but I made it short. But here I would like to say, the idea is rasa, and there is a relationship, and you said it so nicely, a close relationship is there, as a servant, as, you know, as friend, etc., you know. And that is what is the special distinguishing feature of Krishna consciousness. That was my answer. I also gave a very esoteric answer to the devotees who had asked me, but I didn't do this on the stage. Now I want to ask you. So there is the relationship of serving Krishna, and a servant everyone is, and all the rasas, they only want Krishna's pleasure. That is there. There is a servant relationship to give pleasure to Krishna in his own world, to do what Krishna likes, not what I like. In higher forms of Christianity, there is also such a prayer. Your will happen, let that happen, not mine. I want to ask you, why do you enter into someone's service? Why should you do service? See, you are a congregational member, most of you, and to do service to Krishna. Why do this? Why do you at all enter into a service of someone? I've heard, this is Indian psychology now, before a woman commits to a man, because the understanding in traditional Indian marriages is the woman serves the man, she has 5 thoughts. Will this give me happiness? And I think a man will ask this. I'm not expert here, so my examples, I will try something. Man will also ask this. But we can take this out of this context, because some of us may not be entirely comfortable to look into this from this perspective, those who are brahmacharis and sannyasis, or those who are divorced, or those who are frustrated in relationships. So let us not look from this perspective. Why do we enter someone's service? Where we think, will this make me happy? Or we enter someone's service if we see he is clearly my superior to me. For instance, maybe in our circle we see this devotee is so qualified, I should serve him. I mean, this is, if I look at someone like His Holiness Indradumna Maharaj or His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, so qualified that they are really superior to me, let me serve them. Or if I look at someone like Krishna Prema Rupa, such a pure-hearted, good temple leader, the temple president and everything. And maybe he's many things more now. All this. He's the master here. No, or when I come to the retreat and I see others like the leaders of the retreat who are putting this. Okay, I ask, how can I be of service? Another reason to enter someone's service is because he's extremely qualified. For instance, in beauty, one thinks, oh, so really very beautiful. I would like to be close to such a beautiful person. That's good for me somehow, then I will be seen, you know, and so. Most people enter the service when it is not paid. Service is not paid. Ideally, when one wishes a safe relationship, or if I surrender to this person, if I submit to him, he will take care of me like a master takes care of a servant. I think that's also when before people enter a marriage, they will ask the question, well, is this a safe, you know, can I be safe in this relationship, and so on. And the final reason why one serves is because one feels this person loves me and I love him. You know, this I think we feel when we choose a guru and think of I want to serve this person. We feel he loves me, he loves me, and he will do what is good for me. And he will decide what is good for me because he loves me, and I also love him. He's a good man. I can see that. You know that now there will be also female gurus. I hear. I'm not connected so much with the internet news, but that's what I hear. So there is a affectionate relationship, and relationship of interest. These are reasons why one enters into a service, a relationship. One wants happiness. This is a little selfish, but yes, this is a reason. Someone sees he is clearly my master, he is superior to me, or he or she has superior qualities, is very intelligent or beautiful or whatever. Or one wishes to have a safe relationship, or one feels there's an affectionate relationship. So why do you enter into a service of Krishna? Why should you enter the service of Krishna? I think for all these reasons, but because many always tell me Krishna is very far away from me, I have only heard about him, I want to give you one reason which is explained in the Mahabharata, in the Jaiva Dharma. And this reason is always my reason. It was my reason why I joined the Hare Krishna movement, although I knew this will be an unsafe adventure. But I had this one conviction, which I still have and which is giving me life, which convinces me to do service every day. It's because to serve Krishna is natural. It is natural for all of us in this world. Why is it natural? Yes, because we are parts of Him. We are in our essence a soul who inhabits this body and the mind, and it is our natural position to do service. Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks of Dharma here. Dharma is something so natural that you can't imagine to not do it. Dharma has three dimensions, as you know. Oh, this gets complicated. Most people are thinking about Dharma in one dimension. That is, what is my purpose? What should I really do? Maharaj, I only have this one question. What should I do? What is my position in life? Where am I in my Dharma? And I always say, it's something which you cannot imagine to not do. For instance, let me tell you something about myself. I'm taking this from His Holiness Kadambakanana Maharaj. He talks from his heart and he reveals actually also what is in him. And that's why we like him so much. He's so authentic. And here is something. I was meant to become a CEO. Yes, you will laugh, but my father wanted me to become a manager. So, I was going to a very good school for that, but I felt really, really, oh no, that's so boring for me. And then, when I came to Krishna consciousness, somehow, I was fascinated when Prabhupada spoke about preachers and those who preach. They are most dear to Krishna. Krishna says this in the Gita. And I became attracted to preaching. And now, you can put me anywhere. Go, Krishna knows it. Wherever I am, I will just talk to people. It's so natural. I talk even when I buy a ticket. I talk to people about spiritual things when I meet them in the airport. I can't not preach. I cannot stop communicating, at least not for long. It's not possible for me. It's just like I'm sweating and I can't stop it. I can't stop to seem to communicate about things which I consider are essential. It's just, I don't have to force myself to do it. I can't imagine to not do this. When I not do it, I sometimes go on retreats and I'm for 1 month I do not see anyone, and no one sees me, hopefully. But then after some time, I'm exploding, and happily we have the Govardhan retreats, the holy name retreats, that I can explode and say something in about Krishna consciousness. It is very natural. It comes from the inside to the outside. So this is the Swadharma. Your Swadharma, what your purpose is, something which you can't imagine to not do. So in order to come there, you might have to liberate or free yourself from all the stories which you have heard in your life and all the stories you have told yourself about yourself, and have to come to the essential question. What am I really? You know, not what do I tell my stories. What do my stories tell me? And so on. We live too much in stories. This is what we can learn from the children. They have not much of a story about themselves. When they are hungry, they scream. When they're happy, they laugh and throw stones at you. I saw this yesterday. They are unedited. They have not learned all the stories which we have learned, we so-called advanced people. Coming back, so in our essence, in our Sanatan, that which is eternally with us, our Svadharma may change eventually as we go through many reincarnations. But our essential, most essential nature of being a servant of Krishna does not change. And the moment you are entering through the door of service and you do some service, you feel really that this is God. I acknowledge that some of you who live in the temple are overstressed with so many activities, and they have to do things sometimes out of duty to complete the various responsibilities. But if you can do something without the stress of having to fulfill that, you will find that you feel best if you can contribute to the happiness of another, and you can and taking this a step further, if you can do something for Krishna, something which is good, you feel best. There are even psychological investigations. Who is the happiest person in the world? The Americans had to find this out because they're the most unhappy with all their materialism. And they found out in this study, it's those who engage in service occupations. Nurses, yes. People in helping professions and serving professions are the happiest. Now take this one step further and do service for the supreme worthy person, Krishna, then you will be the most happy person in life. So, I will now have to say something entertaining because that was a lot of philosophy. This was a thought. It was not meant to come out of my mouth. I remember once coming to the first Mayapur festival. I had heard in Germany that this is a very nice festival and that Lord Chaitanya is in the Holy Dham and that we would chant there and it would be very ecstatic. But I remember when I came to Mayapur, some of you look so sweet when you sleep. I said I would say something entertaining. It's what you do as a preacher. You have to shift the gear to get everyone back on board. So yes, we had Mayapur and I felt misery. There was no German bread and butter. Germans need bread and butter. By now it's gluten-free bread, but still, and ahimsa butter, or the non-violent butter, but they need that. Oh, and they spoke all English, and I did not know very good English. I'm still learning very desperately to improve my language. Oh, it was so hot. And then you drank these tons of water, and what was the result? Not becoming free from thirst, you got dysentery and became more thirsty. because the water had this bacillus. I was really not in good shape in Mayapur. I felt mental disappointed. The lectures were absolutely boring, and there was so much politics on every corner. No, that time not. I remember that came later. Then these parikramas, and we had to go barefoot, and the feet had, on top of the feet there was a sunburn, and under the feet there were blisters. It was really terrible. I thought of, okay, how do I get out of here quick? And I asked other travel agencies that we can book the ticket and go earlier back to Germany. And then one devotee, I don't know who it was, I cannot give you the name. He came to me and he said, "You look miserable." I said, "Yes. You're the first one who sees it and tells me, thank you for, are you also miserable?" He said, "No. I serve prasadam to the devotees. Would you like to serve?" I said, "What?" I mean, I need people to take care of me now. And I still remember, I was really mental. Then I said, "Well, do you think it will help? I think it will help. Why don't you think about it? And I see you tomorrow at the same place, same time." And I waited really the whole day. I thought about it and I said, "Let me try it." And I remember I went, and you know, you had to take these buckets and serve the devotees who were sitting in the line, and they were sometimes impatient, they wanted more of something, but we could only give one spoon of something, and you know, it was, but I must tell you honestly, and one time I remember there was Kitri on the floor, I had not seen it, and I stepped, and boom, I was on my dhoti. It was the only clean dhoti, it was full of Kitri when I fell. But I still remember, it was such a shift in consciousness. It was from me and mine, the false ego, to an exit of all of this, where I felt all of a sudden the bliss of Krishna consciousness in the Dharma. And since some of you know me, I always have told everyone, when I see they are mental or in discomfort, now do some service, you will see it will change. And it always, always works. So I think we should take this concept which helps us to exit our own little troubled world into a much bigger world of Krishna, the Vaishnavas, and do service. But you have to do it not out of duty, not out of stress, not because it's chic in our society to serve until you fall down and you can't sleep and I did 12 hours a day. No, it's about doing something to give pleasure. That's the whole idea. Think about this during the summer camp. How can you serve another to help them, to give pleasure to them? And think about it in relationship to Krishna. Offer your submission to Krishna, a prayer to Krishna, Today is Tuesday, it's good to offer prayers. Tomorrow is Wednesday, it's very good to offer prayers on Wednesday. The day afterwards is Thursday, it's also extremely good. I think you get the idea. Offer your submission. Start something where you become a little bit free inside. From the I, me, and mine, the tyranny of the I, me, and mine, and humbly submit to Krishna, and desire in your heart, I would like to advance, I would like to come to a level in my Krishna consciousness where I would not be so neophyte any longer. Why? To give pleasure to the Vaishnavas and Krishna. When you sit down to chant, don't think I must do this now out of duty to perform, to finish my rounds. Enter into that where Krishna is interested. He is not interested in your stress. He is interested in your affection or what you do for him. So seva, yes, but seva with devotion. We call this in our movement devotional service. I think you all have heard this word before. This is extremely important. Don't just do and burn out in the end. Do it for Krishna. Think of yourself as you may not have you may not be perfect in many ways, but if you think I belong to him, I am his servant, let me do something for him. The whole japa will all of a sudden become a pleasure festival. You will leave the little self-centered world. This is what I wanted to say. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So let me see if you have any questions now. I always have glasses on, then I don't see you when you get bored, and then I can remain enthusiastic. We have to say something personal. Or you fall asleep. You can only see what is in front of you. Yes, at the moment I can't also see. I see a hand. Yes, that hand. Now, yes.
I struggle with knowing what is the fine line between self-care and selfish service.
Wonderful, wonderful question.
It's a big problem.
Yeah. Let me repeat it for those who will listen to the tapes. Very good question. I wonder, where is the fine line between self-care and selfless service? It's easiest for me to approach it from another perspective. That is, it's not an either or. Self-care is opposed to selfless service, or selfless service is opposed to self-care. I do not think this duality will work here, because both is important. Without taking care of, I will use a word which I use in the Vedic way, your tree of life, you won't be able to do selfless service. Tree of life, what is that? The concept is you need to take care of, just like a tree has root, a trunk, and bark, and what is it, a crown. The human being has roots, his spiritual roots. He has a trunk, how he stands in this world. That's the body and the mind, which needs to be strong, and the mind needs to have some confidence. no, self-confidence. And you need, are a social being, you exist in connection with others and need to have a social life. You can't hurt others, for instance. So everyone needs a strong tree of life, and if he does not do self-care, he won't be able to do selfless service. He doesn't even own his self. The self as we know it now, you know, he is not yet, he has not yet come together. He needs to do this. But after having said this, you must be aware that self-care, which means a balance of all my needs, is an impossible proposition in the material world. There's always something out of balance, because the world is like this. To navigate in this world, there will be times when you are hungry, and or tired, or ill, or there will be times when relationships are not as you wish them to be, but full of misunderstandings, and it just cannot continue in the same way any longer. This does happen. It's part of the world. It's how it is in this world. It's how Krishna describes this. It's everything here is temporary. So you can, everything you can, you have to try to balance as good as possible. That's really the practical tip. As good as possible, and then you need to see that selfless service is something which you is part of your spiritual nature. It's part of your roots. When you don't do the selfless devotional service, you know, your roots are badly suffering. A person who is not able to do selfless activities, he is almost an the gesteigerte form is autism, also so autismus. You know, it's not healthy. A healthy person must be able to do selfless service. And I just think you need to navigate and get into your balance as often as possible. For instance, yesterday you did not see me for a long time. What was I doing? Sleeping like a stone in Switzerland. Because that self-care was required so that I can do my service. Oops, I was out of balance. I know my servant is still out of balance. He needs to sleep. And I know some of the Swami, we have only one Swami, they will also do. Because otherwise you can't do. It's intelligent to do self-care. It's part of your tree of life. But as much as self-care is part of the tree of life, your selfless service is also part of the tree of life. It's not an either or. It's all everything together. Good theory, you think. Balance is a struggle. It's called sattva gun. It's the most difficult.
My running theme in life.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You know, when I was a child, I liked circus. That's where my creativity comes from. I saw very creative circus performances. And there was one thing I still remember. You know, there was this person who performed on a high rope, a Balanceakt, sagt man dazu, and he had this stick, you know, and he was doing everything, salto mortale, frontwards, backwards, and it was so impressive that at the end of his performance, I still remember, my mother still tells me, he came down, climbing down the ladder, And I was a little boy, I ran from my place, I jumped into the manege, I ran through the manege and received him. And I said, congratulations, you did, how did you stay in your balance? I was, as a boy, not so, I didn't have so many stories. I was happy to run and greet him. And then he said, he looked at me, he said, young man, he had an accent, I think. Young man, I was never in my balance. But for this I have a stick. It's very difficult in the material nature to maintain sattva. There's always rajas and tamas coming in, always. Always. When you can maintain sattva, the balanced state, and you can purify it, gets pure, 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 still pure, pure, switch, it's Vishuddha sattva, pure goodness where the Lord reveals himself on that level. No? Try your best. That's good enough. It's really Yes, I must admit I can't see you because of the light, but I can hear you. Yes. Karuna Mayi. Genau.
What would you say is the stick for the
Wie bitte? The stick of balance. Love. Love or the beginning stages of love for Krishna, because then you begin to understand I need to put my life in order so that I can serve my Lord. It's only this. We are not, and then Krishna may give us mercy when he sees. It doesn't work in a different way. Yes, you can do Ayurvedic massages. Yes, you can go for Vedic coaching. By the way, I have now a book on Vedic coaching. Some of you are coaches by profession, so I can recommend, I can say. Yes, there's many things, because we all know sattva-gun, people are most happy in sattva-gun. But how to obtain this in Kali Yuga with our minds? We must do some mercy is necessary for this. And the Lord will give his mercy surely when he sees we try. We little imperfect persons try. So therefore we say devotional service, loving devotional service. Sometimes we say love of God. This is our movement stands for this. We need to, love will tell you what to do. 100%. Now, it's on my tongue, really. There was once an autistic boy. I like to tell this as an example because autism is a form of extreme self, or I must say, Yusara is here and her brother. You must correct me if I say it wrong. It's, how would you describe autism? Selbstbezogenheit? Nee, oder? It's a yes, good. Let's go with this definition. It's a disturbance in you can't relate to others. You are only with yourself, and you can't even step and even. So when there was an autistic child, and his psychotherapeut was there, who had worked with him for many years, and finally, in a desperate attempt, he threw a pen before him and said, give me the pen. the boy, for the first time, it somehow sank in. He could take the pen and give it to another, the psychotherapeut. And this is how the pattern was broken a little bit. Then the psychotherapist could bring him out of his little mental prison, really. It's a terrible disease. So he went to a conference and he described the method. Here I took the pen, I threw it before the boy, asked him give it, and he came out of his world and gave me the pen. And now he is on the way to major improvements. Wow, said the other psychotherapeuts. And there was a conference of 1,000 or so people, and they all tried the pen method on their patients. What do you think was the success rate? I asked yesterday Syamananda, and Syamananda said zero. And I said, yeah, otherwise I wouldn't have told the story. But why was it zero? Listen, in the gesture of putting the pen, there were years of concern, said the psychotherapeut. He must have thought, I wish I could help him. He's so poor in his life. He needs help. Oh, no. I must help him. These years of affectionate, or let us say, care is the word. These years of care culminated. And when he threw the pen, bang, that was the last drop which made the made the child come out of his mental prison. This is a very good example. And I want to say it, this afternoon I will again teach methods and techniques like I always do. But I know, and you should know, it's just to get us moving in a direction. The methods in itself are not really important. What is important is that we start to move out of our conditioned little world, out of our mental prisons in which each one who is not yet Krishna consciousness lives, comes, and that we go out of this, break through to the other, to the side of Krishna consciousness. That is what is important in this. Methods won't help. And also to reach Sattvagun. There are many tips, there are books now out. I studied this a little. Do this, do this, do this, do this. But I found out help is needed from above. And the Lord responds to even the little devotion from his devotees, the little, the smallest amount of devotion. He likes that. That is what he's interested in. He's not interested in outer, in so much outer things. Good. I will end here. Thank you very much. I wish you a wonderful second full day of the retreat. I think if you just stay for 1 second, our Krishna Prema Rupa will give us an orientation.